Blog Talk Radio.
Good Sunday evening and welcome to Average Joe Radio. This is Average Joe. Today we're going to be talking about the war of the boat. No, not really. We're going to be talking about the War of 1812, Indian Wars, and the Mexican War. Now, we've been, technically third in a series of our war that the Americans have been involved in. I don't know that we can get through all three of these today. We can run past our 30, I have found out in recent times, but I don't want to be just rambling if we're just rambling. You know, if we've got some good conversation going on about it, we'll go on about it. You know, so I want you guys to call in 914-219-0884. So again, the War of 1812, the Indian Wars, and the Mexican War. This day in history, 1971. Soviet cosmonauts perish in reentry disaster. The three Soviet cosmonauts who served as the first crew of the world's first space station die when their spacecraft depressurizes during reentry. On June 6th, the cosmonauts, now I'm going to butcher these names. I'll go ahead and give you that up front. Georgi Dobrovolsky, Vladislav Volkov, and Viktor Patsayev. Is that butchered enough, or should I try to make it a little worse? Anyway, I could make a lot of jokes about that, but I'm not going to. They were launched into space, especially talking about these guys dying here, into space aboard the Soyuz 11 on a mission to dock and enter Salyut 1, the Soviet space station that had been placed in orbit in April. The spacecraft successfully docked with the station, and the cosmonauts spent 23 days orbiting the Earth. On June 30th, they left the Salyut 1 and began reentry procedures when they first tried the explosive bolts to separate the Soyuz 11 reentry capsule from another stage of the spacecraft. A critical valve was jerked open. 100 miles above the Earth, the capsule was suddenly exposed to the nearly pressureless environment of space. As the capsule rapidly depressurized, Patsayev tried to close the valve by hand but failed. Minutes later, the cosmonauts were dead. As a result of the tragedy, the Soviet Union did not send any future crews to Salyut 1, and it was more than 2 years before they attempted another manned mission. That's a bad one, and that was, you know, these are the Soviets, but, you know, those were brave men, and, you know, I like to give all the, you know, all the kudos I can to our American teams, but, you know, the Soviets, they've been working on it too, and even though we're kind of, I guess we've always kind of been bumping heads with the Soviets, you know, they have definitely advanced the space program as well. We've been hiking with them to get to the space station since we stopped the space shuttle program. So on we go. Oh, about forgot. Album of the month. It's end of the month. It's June 30th. I've been getting your nominations. We didn't have more than one of any particular nomination, so Above Average Joe and myself, we just had to take this to the judges, and this is another obscure band or artist, Sam Jeffrey, Starshoot, 1964. Somewhat familiar, you know, I don't know. All right, let's move on. We got a lot of material to cover here. Call in 914-219-0884. We're in our series of War with the Americans, or the Americans at War, whatever how you want to look at it. This is the third episode. We started out with the just kind of a pilot series talking about war in general. Last week we talked about the Revolutionary War, so we're kind of going in chronological order here. So first off, War of 1812. This one puzzles me. I never have been able to find any accurate information on when this war occurred. If you have any information on that, please call in. I would love to know. I mean, I know I said it was in chronological order, but the War of 1812, it's kind of a weird name to call a war anyway, but, you know, if you have any information on when this war actually occurred. This war, well, one side was the United States. We were officially the United States then, and we were, I say we, our ancestors were getting on and tried. This was kind of a, I guess you could say, a follow-up of the Revolutionary War. We were still at odds with the Brits. Imagine that. And we decided, you know, aside from them being the greatest naval power in the world, we decided to take them on in a conflict that would have an immense impact on the young country's future. That would be us. Causes of the war included British attempts to restrict the United States trade. You know, once again, you know, we need to throw another tea party. The Royal Navy's, of course, it had nothing to do with taxes at that point. The Royal Navy's impressment of American seamen. Man, I always have a hard time not making a joke when I read that word. And America's desire to expand its territory. we wanted to grow. What can I say? That's what we did. That's what we were about. The United States suffered many costly defeats at the hands of the British. The Canadians and the Native American troops were over the course of the War of 1812. I knew we had some conflicts with the Canadians, and then, of course, the Native Americans, and we'll get into that in the next segment on American Indian Wars, hopefully today. But this, I mean, this also included in all these conflicts the capture and burning of the nation's capital. And that would be Washington, D.C. I knew it had been burnt, but I had forgotten at what time. And so this is, again, this is really good stuff to be going through I guess, you know, renewing my my history knowledge of American wars and just in general. Mr. Scott, I see you're there. If you are ready to, you know, jump in, I'm certainly fine with that. Just let me know. But you know, they captured our capital and burned it down. But we were able to repulse them in invasions in New York and Baltimore and New Orleans, which, you know, boosted the national confidence and kind of fostered a new spirit of patriotism as it were. The ratification of the Treaty of Ghent on February 17th, and that was in 1815, ended the war but left many of the most contentious questions unresolved. So the war ended in 1815, so I know, you know, the War of 1812 must have started sometime before then, but I'm not quite sure when. Nonetheless, many of the United States celebrated the War of 1812 as a second War of Independence, beginning an era of partisan agreement and national pride. So, you know, again, this was still kind of, you know, just because we had ended the Revolutionary War per se, there was still a lot of resistance and you know, headbutting with the Brits. And apparently with the Canadians and with the Native Americans, I think the Canadians, they hung on and still, well, really still more allied with the Brits, and we are today, of course, but the Canadians are still actually governmentally connected with Britain, and that's another show. It's all about the Queen. So that's the short version of that. So I think what I'm going to do, since we're trying to cover three here, I'm going to not get real deep into any of them, and then if we have time or if we want to expound, and again, 914-219-0884. If you want to call in and you have some good information or you're an expert, you have to know more than average Joe, unless you just happen to be an average Joe as well. And you can call in if you're an average Joe, or even if you're a below average Joe. We're fine with that. We do have a support group. Hi, I'm Average Joe, and I'm average.
Hi, Average Joe.
Yeah, I keep sipping coffee. I'm trying to, keep my energy level up. I wanted to just look at some stats for a minute. We're going to pause from our normal dialogue here. The War of 1812, just to a few numbers here. in the War of 1812, we had a total, the War of 1812, oh, here it is. It started in 1812. Interesting. Okay, and then it went to 1815, as I had said earlier. The total U.S. service members involved in this war, 200. Now, this is from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, so I'm pretty confident this is accurate information. I didn't just get this off of, Fred's war information website. There was 286,730 service members involved, more than a quarter of a million members involved. And so, and this is local territory, too. This is local North America stuff, blowing up stuff and, killing people. And battle deaths, 2,260. Now, I'm assuming that's Americans, 2,260. Non-mortal woundings, 4,505. So I guess, if you look at the sheer numbers of people involved, out of over almost 300,000 soldiers, we lost a little over 2,000 in a 3-year war in the way they fought back then. I'd say that's not horrible. It's horrible because it's war. Mr. Scott, I'm going to go ahead and pull you on here. I need somebody to bounce off of, if you don't mind. Mr. Scott,
hello.
Are you there?
I am. How you doing?
See what happens is when you get on, man, I might pull you in at any moment, whether you want to or not.
Well, that's no problem. I've been trying to respond on the non-cell phone that I have, and suddenly we have no service. Imagine that.
Well, how about that, isn't it? I guess, somebody must have poked me on the shoulder and said, pull Mr. Scott on in here.
You're done good. I have almost nothing to add. I'm about as ignorant on this subject. Not saying that you are, but I'm more so.
Well, I'm pretty ignorant, but, I can read, and I know you can too, but... and that's fine. If you don't have anything to add to this particular segment, that's perfectly fine. It's sometimes when I get to a certain point here, it's easy to kind of be conversational about it, and that's one thing we've talked about, when you're there to be Mr. Ed McMahon, that we can just bounce off of each other. But I invite any of you in the audience again to participate, 914-219-0884.
I would love to have some feedback on what I'm about to say, because the only thing I have to add is a quote that is attributed to the War of 1812, and I'm not even certain about that. But one of the naval engagements was Captain John Paul Jones. I know we've all heard it. and I'm, as always, 50% certain it happened during the War of 1812. He was a Scottish gentleman, and I assume he was an American citizen, if not then, at some point. But I think his major impetus was just wanting to get back at the British. It's kind of a, I'm told, a long-going thing. A lot of the British subjects in the British Isles were pretty well down on the British, if I understand that right. But he was engaged in some naval battle somewhere, and I don't even know where that was. He was flying the American flag and fighting a British warship. I think he was on the Bonhomme Richard, if I'm pronouncing that right. And I do forget the British naval vessel he was fighting. But apparently his ship was blown all to heck and just about to sink. And the British commander asked him if he was ready to surrender his colors. And he is said to have said, I have not yet begun to fight.
Oh, yeah.
And I've always, you know, been enamored with that phrase. And
yeah.
So his ship did sink. But he was able to take possession of said naval vessel, and I wish I knew which one that was. But we've heard that in school for years, and it's told as the truth. Who knows? I do not know the actual facts behind that. But supposedly he did win that particular engagement and seized that British vessel, which was what you're supposed to do in those times. So I thought that was interesting.
That just goes to show you were at least paying more attention than I was, because I do remember bits and pieces of that story and definitely the punchline at the end.
Right, that's all I know about it.
But I would definitely not be able to put that any of that together like you just did. So hats off to you there, Mr. Scott. One thing I had done. Huh?
No, I'm done. I was just going to say, I'm not even sure that was in so-called American waters.
No,
I kind of think
cool.
That was in Europe, but I don't know.
We have given full disclosure to the audience of tens of thousands out there that we may or may not know what we're talking about.
Oh yes.
So we can make stuff up if we want.
Okay.
But we're not going to do that on purpose, though. I'm just kidding.
Right.
But the you were trying to remember the name of the ship, and when I was reading up on this earlier about the War of 1812 and us basically taking on the greatest naval fleet in the world, I was wondering what kind of ships, what kind of technology was around in that time period. And I was looking at I just did a search on warships of 1812. You know, that thing about me not knowing when the war started, I was just kidding. It was a joke. It was like 18... When was it? I already forgot. But anyway, there was the USS Constitution. Anyway, these were all sailing ships, of course. Flagship Niagara League. There was the HMS Detroit. The USS Chesapeake. Now, if any of these sound familiar, to go with your story, just, hit the buzzer. The HMS Impevier or something like that, HMS Macedonian, the USS Wasp, and this may be a French vessel, being that it's in French, Prince de Neuf-Châtel, the USS United States, I wonder where that one came from, and the USS President, USS Fair American, USS General Pike. There's a bunch of them. I'm not going to read them all. There's even a USS Hornet. They're still using that one. That's an aircraft carrier these days. But anyway, I just was interested. What kind of technology did we have when we started pummeling and each other out in the ocean with the Brits back then?
Right.
So,
They had a series of frigates that they built. That was their...
Yes.
Designation, and I think the Constitution had 44 guns, as they say. I don't know how big they were, but supposedly the frigate was a good compromise to a fledgling nation. It still cost like heck to build them, and I can't remember how many they originally had. And they were out there fighting with the ships of the line, as the British called their bigger ships, and that has another importance. I don't know what it means, but apparently they were bigger. But the that was a good cost-effective way to have a middle-range ship that could go in shallower draft waters, but still big enough to withstand an attack by a larger ship. And they had several of those. I think they had the Philadelphia, I think, was one. Constitution, and they had a Constellation, and several more. But again, I really don't know.
Mr. Scott, man, I didn't know I was going to have an old ship forensic expert on the show today.
Yeah, me too. I don't know that you do. I'm pretty sure you do.
I love that.
Not yet.
Hey, well, you know what? I mean, when I first started doing Average Joe, I'd always kind of opened up and I'd say, I know a little bit. I don't know much about anything, but I know a lot about a lot of things. I think you know a little bit about a lot more things.
I doubt that, seriously, but thank you for saying that.
Well, anyway, thank you for that. That was a good add to the thing. So unless you have anything else, I'm going to move on to the American Indian Wars.
No, I'm done.
Are you good with that?
I know even less about that, so I'll just be glad to co-host.
Well, the American Indian Wars, I was researching this a little bit, and it's kind of obvious. This is basically, in some readings I've put where it's basically about a 300-year conflict between, the Native American folks and everybody else, mostly Europeans, a.k.a. white people. But when you look at the document that I pulled from the VA or the Department of Veterans Affairs, it designates it as officially from 1817 to 1898. So that's I'm not a mathematician, but I don't think that's 300 years now. So I don't know what particular, what they, because, I mean, we were basically doing bad things. And when I say we, our ancestors were doing bad things to these folks, from the very start, once we showed up, eventually. I think Columbus was, I can't nail down this quote. This is just a very general statement I'm about to make, but he had indicated when he was, talking about the Native Americans that they saw that they should be easily used essentially as slaves. That was kind of his, the value that he placed on these people.
Right.
Had you heard that? Had you ever heard that?
I have not. That ethic kind of makes sense to me, but I didn't realize that that's part of his plan, but I haven't heard that. It makes total sense.
Yeah. So, needless to say, and this is a little bit of a sensitive subject because it is a cultural / racial thing. The Europeans didn't really think that Native Americans were, up to their standard. They didn't value them as the same level of beings as them, and so it's really caused a lot of dirty history on the part of us Europeans and American history in general. Well, I know how I feel about it. I can't change it. It's what happened. It's where we came from, and it's where we are. And let's try to learn from our mistakes. And some most have, I think. Let's move forward. But okay, so the numbers from the VA document, total U.S. service members, and this is an estimate, was 106,000. So I don't know if they mean official, you know, U.S. Army, U.S. whatever, official soldiers, or if they're talking about anybody that ever fought with the Native Americans, period. I don't know. That's just the numbers that the VA is giving. Battle deaths, and again, that's an estimate as 1,000. And that's from a period of a little more than 50 years, 60 or so years. Again, I'm really kind of the subject of this is really disturbing, and it just you know, from either side, it, you know, I'm but let's move on. Suspicion and hostility. Stemming from technological and cultural differences, as well as mutual feelings of superiority, have permeated relations between Native American and non-Indians in North America. In intertribal antagonisms among the Indians and nationalistic rivalries, bad faith, and an expansionist's desires on the part of non-Indians exacerbated these tensions. The resulting white-Indian conflicts often took a particularly brutal turn and ultimately resulted in the near destruction of the indigenous peoples. Tell me what you think about this, Mr. Scott, but it was basically about the fact, as I indicated, the Europeans looked at them as not being as the Europeans being superior, you know, in general, and then it was all about territory. You know, we wanted their stuff. We wanted their land.
Right. I think that's the underlying need was for them to just go away, according to our ancestors. You know, all ethnocentric hatred or belittlement aside, they just needed them gone, and I think it. At some point in the mid-18th century, the British claimed, after they had gotten most of the native people moved out, they set up the spine of the Appalachian Mountains as a territory for no white people to proceed west from that. In other words, they kind of conceded that to the Indians, ostensibly, anyhow. And a lot of Indians, apparently, from what I've heard, tried to adhere to that. And they say, yeah, we'll go over there if y'all leave us alone. And apparently it didn't last too long because, you know, for whatever reason, our ancestors felt that was their right to go do that. And Europe apparently was in such turmoil that America did sound like a lot better deal. So no matter how rough it was here, again, our ancestors just kept coming, boatload after boatload after boatload. Pretty early on, they went right on across the Appalachians and started doing what they do over there. I think any belittlement of the natives was just kind of convenient. I'm sure that they felt that way too, but I think primarily they just wanted them gone so they could have the land.
Well, one thing I was thinking about, and this was, I know I'm not going to, we're probably not going to get into the Mexican-American War today because, you know, we're already looking at about 30 minutes here, but we're not going to stop right at 30 minutes. We're going to finish out this discussion. But one thing I was thinking about this week, thinking about this subject coming up, and one thing that's kind of, had put my mind at this Above Average Joe and myself, we've been watching this series on on TV called Yellowstone, and it's about this big rancher out in Montana. And basically the gist of the whole thing is it's a territory, and this is a modern day Western essentially, but it's a territory, you know, he's got a ranch that's as big as Rhode Island. It's like 200 and something thousand acres, and it's so big he has to have a helicopter to get around on it. And then the Native Americans, who are wanting their land back, and their business savvy chief, who's planning on building what do you call those places that you gamble at? Dang.
Maybe a casino?
Casino. Casinos, yes. He's wanting to build casinos and basically get the Americans to come and play in the casinos and get all their money and then buy the land back, you know, from the money that he got from them. So he's pretty savvy. And then you got the third element of the another powers coming in who just wants to build housing developments and wants to take the land for that. So you got these three different power struggle triangle going on here. So it's a pretty good series, by the way. I'm not getting paid to promote that show, but it's pretty good. But anyway, so it got me to thinking about mankind in general and our struggle in survival. And, you know, this is not the first time that this has happened in history or even probably prehistory or prehistoric. You know, people or beings of any kind will do what they need to do to survive. Whether it's right or wrong, looking at it from a moral perspective, you know, animals that protect their territory or take territory, you know, your dogs, you know, wolves, whatever, they go around and pee on everything and mark their territory. It's ingrained in our nature as survivalists to procreate and to have more of us than them, as it were. Now, again, I'm not saying that there's a moral license to make that okay when it comes to human beings, and I'm certainly not, you know, advocating or giving an excuse to the Europeans for pushing the natives out, but it just got me to thinking about it. What do you think about that, Mr. Scott?
Well, again, for whatever reason, whenever you have an expansionist ethic or a plan, I don't know if it's an ethic, it just kind of fuels itself. Everybody wants theirs. We're all entitled to it, in our opinion. And I'm trying to remember, like a native philosophy would be, who can own the earth and the sky, because we're all
right.
Just passing through anyhow. But
yeah.
At some point in the old country, as we call Europe, they says, oh, no, you can have it. You just have to buy it. And that's where the, you know, king's grants and all that came from. That was, as I understand it, incentive for people to come over here and establish a, for lack of a better word, a white country or settlement, and that was pretty easily come by, as I understand. I mean, they weren't given
yeah.
it to just anybody, but if you could come over and so-called improve the land and make the land pay for itself, the hunter-gatherers kind of went by the wayside, as long as people could buy a saleable crop, tobacco or whatever, and made it, you know, more of a commodity than a way to survive. And whatever it took to exterminate the indigenous people. That was just part of the cost of doing business.
Right.
And I'm sure, you know, a lot of people probably did think that that was God's will or something like that, but I think that's just an aside to, you know, how they achieved what they wanted to. I'm sure some people did believe it was God's will, but I don't know how prevalent that really was.
Right.
If that
well, I guess, you know, it's just what I was thinking. And, again, I'm not, you know, I'm not advocating any of this. I'm just saying that historically, you know, man has been raping and pillaging and taking and getting what's theirs and what's yours and what's everybody else's forever. And it's kind of like, you know, cultures clashing and racism and people, you know, there's always been racism. And I don't, and there's, you know, this condition, it's part of the human condition. We're broken. We're broken people. We always have been. So, I mean, it's just a commentary. I'm not trying to say, you know, well, since we're that way, you know, get over it.
Right.
I'm not saying that at all.
No, no.
So I didn't get into a lot of details about this. I don't really, you know, there's a lot of details so far as dates and names and particular battles and all that goes with the American Indian Wars. But, you know, I was just more interested and am more interested in the struggle and why and the kind of like what you were saying about how the, you know, participators, you know, were thinking they were doing God's will, and justifying it, you know, and these nasty. I mean, if you think about our culture, even in our time, you know, growing up, when we played cowboys and Indians, usually the Indians were the bad guys.
Oh yeah, according to Hollywood, that's very true.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what? Yeah, you watch the old cowboy movies from the 40s and 50s, and you know those savages—they're out there trying to kill us if we go through their land. The nerve of those guys!
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that wasn't very long ago. So, you know, I'm just saying, if I was a Native American, I might be a little bitter.
No doubt. I think most of us would.
So, I don't know. Maybe we'll talk about that some more. You know, again, I'm not an expert on the details, but just the whole premise of that particular war or wars, it doesn't, I don't know. I don't even know why they call it a war. I mean, I do, but it wasn't like we declared war on the Native Americans and they did, or they did declared war on the white people or whoever was trying to take their land. And then with that said, you know, Native Americans are people too, and they're not perfect either. And I'm sure there was some dirty deeds on their part. There was, you know, there was, if you go, we're going to get to the Civil War, we probably won't get to it next week because we're going to be covering the Mexican-American War next week. But, you know, so far as slavery goes, there were Native American slaves, but there were also Native American slave owners. So, you know. Even though that culture as a whole was, you know, definitely dealt a bad hand from the Europeans, you know, they're not all perfect or free of guilt on across the board, put it that way.
Right.
So, you got anything else, Mr. Scott?
I pretty much extended my wisdom quite a while.
Well, I appreciate that. And we did, we ran over time a little bit, but I wasn't worried about that, and I just kind of felt like maybe we needed to discuss this from a more philosophical point of view. I can kind of relate to that part of it a little better than I can trying to go through and be your history teacher. You know, I can sit here and read off the internet, you know, but I'm pretty sure nobody wants me to do that, so I don't want to do that. If I were an expert, I'd be happy to, you know, dissertate some incredible knowledge, and that might be just as boring, but it's important. I don't try to belittle the importance of the American Indian wars, but I kind of, I guess, quite the contrary, by being more philosophical and talking about the moral issues and all that, I think it's just more something I'm more comfortable talking about and feel a little bit more, maybe like I know a little bit more what I'm talking about. Than
I feel you, me too.
Yeah. So thanks for working with me on that, you know.
Anytime. So, my pleasure.
Yeah. So for those of you that are listening, there are no stunt commentators here. Mr. Scott and myself, we do our own stunts. We're shooting totally from the hip. No practice shots or anything. We totally just there's no script, no stunt men. And you're welcome. So Mr. Scott, I appreciate you, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in this Sunday evening. If you're listening to the recording, thank you for listening. And for Mr. Scott and myself, Average Joe, we bid you adieu, and we'll see you next week. We'll be talking about the Mexican-American War.
Sounds good. Have a good week.
Thank you, sir. See you then.
Bye.